All right. Happy to have you along for another episode of TechWatch Radio. We keep an eye on tech so you don't have to. Brought to you by NetworkProvidersInc.com. NPITechGuys.com is the site for the show specifically. Check it all out, ladies and gentlemen. We are your IT consultants on your radio. We want to make sure tech serves you, that it doesn't own you. That's what, sadly, people are starting to become kind of slaves to tech in many ways. When will tech, you know, get out of the way and do a great job for me? Well, with AI, that's what they're trying to make happen. They claim it's supposed to make your life better and easier than anything else. However, before we kick off our AI conversation, Elon Musk kind of has a warning for us all about it, doesn't he, Jay?
Yeah, so he recently came out and said he was closing arguments or a closing Q&A that he was doing at the Bosch Connected World Conference. And he says, I've never seen a technology advance any faster than this. The chip shortage may be behind us, but AI and EVs are expanding at such a rate that the world's supply will soon face crunches in electricity and transformers within the next year. That's the impressive part of what he says. But he says, you know, artificial intelligence computing online appears to be increasing by a factor of 10 every 6 months. That's way more than Moore's Law would keep up with, right? He says, obviously, we can't continue at such a high rate forever, or it'll exceed the mass of the universe. I've never seen anything like it. The chip rush is bigger than any gold rush that has ever existed. He also went on to say, I think we're really on the edge of probably the biggest technology revolution that has ever existed. Pretty interesting.
It's very interesting. It's good, and it's scary because we haven't had the conversations. The technology is going faster than the conversations are. But when he says we're going to run out of electricity, what are we going to do? You know, when you got your air conditioner, you got your car, you got your AI chomping on whatever it's doing and stuff like that, at some point, what are we going to either back off on and not have, or what are we going to do to make up the difference? You know, unless we're going to have coal-powered plants or something, I don't see where you're going to make all this extra electricity needed. Our electricity needs are increasing exponentially. And our ability to handle that increase is not there. What's going to happen, Jay, do you think?
I don't know. I think people will make concessions. I think you'll see, you know, they come up with solutions like rolling blackouts and rationing of things. But I think that we will see. One of the problems that we've had, and we've seen this in computing, and it's a little bit analogous. You know, when you have tons of memory, tons of hard drive space, people write programs, they get really bloaty and they get huge and they're not conservative about anything. I think we've had a similar problem with energy in that it's been so ubiquitous, so available, so cheap that a lot of things haven't been very efficient. And we've seen this kind of a revolution in lighting with LEDs. You know, CFLs, the compact fluorescents before that, and fluorescent lighting, and then LEDs. And I think we're going to see more of that. I mean, now you have these split unit air conditioners that are incredibly efficient, very high SEER ratings. They're more efficient. Like, you can reverse cycle them, for example, and you can heat with them. And when you heat with one of those, you actually get more heat out of it by pulling heat out of the air. Even though the air is cold outside, there's more heat that it can extract out of that air and bring into the inside than you can with the same amount of wattage just running flat an electrical coil, where you're getting 100% of the energy of that electricity converted to heat into the room. You can sometimes get 2 and 3 times that amount of heat using these split systems in reverse cycle. So I think that there's going to be a revolution in efficiency that will let us do more with what we already have.
And that certainly is the hope. But when you hear a guy saying we're going to run out of electricity and transformers, that's not sounding good for the crank up of the industry, if you will.
No. And this is a guy that's really got his pulse, his finger on the pulse of a lot of this stuff, but in chips, in electricity, in EVs, in space technology. So it's interesting to see him say that.
And then you kind of ask the next question. So they're forging right ahead with all these AI technologies, nevertheless, and they're building it into your everyday use case. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is going to make the explosion. Because even at my house, if I just query a chatbot, I don't realize behind the scenes there's a ton of crunching going on that gets that done. You know, we're talking about groups of computers that make all this stuff happen. You might not see it locally on your electricity, but understand that it's sucking power somewhere like something fierce. And so Gemini now is the merger of a chatbot and an assistant. It enters the arena. As it races to compete with OpenAI like ChatGPT and others, Google has retired its, quote, Bard chatbot. Now, that was a very short, I don't know what you want to call it, misstep release by Google, but now they're coming back, and they've got a more powerful app, they claim. At first, they were talking about digital assistants like Siri and all that kind of stuff. Then there's Google and Bard, and now they're talking about these chat engines that have conversations, not just, you know, you say something and they respond. They're more long-term chat. They're starting to have memory where they can remember things that you said or things that you asked so that context starts to come into play. Computer programmers with coding tasks and even preparing job hunters for interviews and stuff like that, all that's coming online. They've got all kinds of scenarios of how they're going to make this thing happen. But when it rolls out to where everybody's using it without even a thought, Jay, I mean, the need for the back end to make this happen, I don't know what's going to happen. I think they might create a crisis on it, Jay.
It's huge.
You're rolling out to too many people too fast, right?
I remember not too many years ago with the rise of Bitcoin, people were saying, oh, Bitcoin and cryptocurrency that's consuming too much electricity, we're all going to be out of electricity because of this. And I think that AI has really come on even stronger than that did as far as adoption rates and the rate of increase in growth that we're seeing. AI really took people by storm. And with Bard, yes, it was short-lived, but I think that Google kind of felt like they got caught with their pants down when OpenAI rolled out ChatGPT to the public in November of 2022. Everybody was blown away, and Google saw the writing on the wall. They were like, oh my gosh, we've got to get a hold of this. We got to roll something out. We can't have some little company. A lot of those guys from OpenAI were ex-Google employees. Just rolling this out and one-upping us. We're supposed to be the search giant. We're supposed to, you know, have that kind of that market cornered. And I think Bard was their first draft or whatever, their first public rollout. And Gemini, which is taking over Bard, is just their next iteration. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see another iteration in 6 months or a year where they come out with something even better. Gemini 2.0, or they just rename it. I think personally it's kind of better, like, instead of ChatGPT, which to me is a dumb name anyway, to come up with a name like Bard, Gemini, it kind of humanizes it a little bit more, but it also lets people kind of track which iteration you're in. Instead of, oh, you're in ChatGPT 3.5 or ChatGPT 4, to go from Bard to Gemini, it sounds like more progress kind of, and you kind of feel like there's a different, at least maybe persona behind it. But so I think Google's just catching up. I think they see that they have a plan just like OpenAI does for ChatGPT. You can pay $20 a month to get kind of their premier version or their pro version with more queries and API keys and all that kind of stuff. And I want to see this roll out to hardware devices. And I know they're going to do it, but like Siri, like Alexa, like the Google, I don't even know what Google's unit is called. I think they just say, hey, Google. I don't even know if it has a name. I don't remember. But like that, where you're like you're saying, where you can just have a conversation with something and it can be more of an assistant and less of just kind of a prompt response, sort of a simple bot.
Well, and add the intelligence, though, to put context. I mean, sometimes I go in circles with some of these bots, whether it be Siri or Alexa or whoever, where, you know, I ask a question, then they answer, and then I say this, then they say this, and then they're like, who, what? Because they're lost.
Yeah, because they don't keep track of the conversation.
Right, which they've got to keep track of the conversation. That's the memory that I'm talking about, where it understands contextually what it's talking about. It spawns a kind of a memory bank or table for the conversation so that it can go, when I say call whatever, or do this or that, they can't be confused.
The problem
anyway,
is,
so that
who's going to own all that data about you, though? You know, who's going to... This thing is learning all about you. It's going to know you better than you do. If you don't own that data and other people have it, that's not going to be cool.
But you can't own it, and they will have it.
I know. That's the problem.
This whole thing is going beyond the conversation here. Your questions are great. The problem is they're rolling it out, and your question's going to be too late.
Right.
Not because your question wasn't timely, but I'm talking about having the conversation and putting the guardrails and the different things in place, right?
Yeah,
that's the point.
People aren't going to care. Gen Xers, whatever, they're all right with it, Sam.
Well, when will the standard digital assistant, such as Siri and Alexa, be replaced by the next gen chatbots then? When is it going to happen? See, they, you know, I agree this stuff is going quickly. At the same time, I'm saying, you know what? Bring it on.
Look for Google to be the one to do it, though. You know, Amazon
maybe
and Apple.
Alexa is probably the best assistant so far that there is.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially because you can buy the hardware for so cheap. I mean, if you want Siri, for example, you got to buy an iPhone. If you just want an Alexa, I mean, you can buy an Echo Dot for, what, $20, $30 and have that around. Yeah. So certainly in that sense,
and it's smarter though. I've compared Siri against Alexa and stuff like that forever, over and over and over. And Alexa's much smarter.
90% of the questions that I ask Siri, like that aren't inside the box. Like if you're not asking what's the temperature
outside,
it just
sends you out in the weeds.
Yeah. Right. It's just like, I found this on the web and like, oh yeah, that's super helpful while I'm driving. I can't even deal with that. But at least Alexa is a little better of finding something, reading you something or whatever, even if it doesn't know the answer is one of its pre-configured things.
You
so
know,
I would
Google's
say Alexa
somehow
best.
In the middle of Alexa and you know, Siri. To me, Siri's the worst. Google's next, but the best one is Alexa so far.
In order to have Google, though, you've got to either have buy one of those Google devices, or you've got to have a Android phone or whatever. I don't have a ton of experience on that. So,
well, and that's my point is how ubiquitous it is. And I'm telling you, most of the times people use digital assistants at home or in the car. I'm not saying you won't use them other places, but those are the two biggest places people use them, I think.
I think Google has the fire, though. They feel like they're playing catch up to OpenAI, and they're the ones, I believe, that are going to get theirs into one of these home chatbot, you know, devices kind of things, or on their phone, on Android phones, the fastest.
You might be right, and that answers the question, at least not in time exactly, but hey, when will the standard digital assistant be replaced by these things? I hope it's soon, because I'm tired of single, you know, ask a question, get back single answers.
If I were to estimate the time,
I want to be able to build upon what I'm asking in a meaningful way.
Right.
That's where usability comes out the other end, right?
Yeah. If I were to estimate a time, I'd say before the end of this year.
Okay, man. Chase predictions on the table, ladies and gentlemen. There you have it. In fact, it's being built into more places than I just mentioned. Gemini is the merger of the chatbot and the assistant. But now Brave's, that's the browser. Brave browser, right?
Right.
They have what they're called. It's called Leo AI Assistant. It's now available to Android users. Aisha Malik with this piece. So that's partially the start of what you're saying. Brave is, I guess they're bold and brave, Jay. They're beating everybody to it already almost, right?
Windows is rolling out theirs into Windows 11 now, too. I can't remember what it's called, but I see the little icon.
Is that exciting to you? Or is that concerning to you?
Is it exciting to me? It's a two-edged sword because I'm still avoiding Windows 11 personally. I'm not.
Understand.
I don't have it on any of my machines.
I'm frustrated by a lot of it.
Yeah, that's the problem.
There's stupid things that happen where they make changes that are catastrophic in the frustrations.
Every right-click menu they think is fancier and new and is just frustrating to me, and I just have to either start adapting to it when I use Windows 11 computers, or I have to right-click on the like more options and get the original Windows 10 like menu back. And those sort of things to me are very frustrating. So I've kind of avoided Windows 11 right now. I know that we're on a timetable. Middle of next year is when Windows 10 expires. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, but it is frustrating. And I, you know, they got to think about not taking away things people need, you know. And the more you kind of change that, the worse it is. Anyway, I thought I'd bring that to your attention, though.
Copilot
about the AI.
Is the name for the Windows.
Yeah, Copilot is the Microsoft one.
Exactly. The Halo thing. What was it called? The late Cortana. And now they've renamed
it to
Copilot. Yeah.
Cortana Copilot. Yeah, I guess it's the next step. What I find interesting about all these tools, though, is when they start to build it into everything, Jay, what's fascinating to me is just the way we go about whatever's the rage. The rage is to put an AI bot in everything you do now, right?
Yeah, it's a buzzword now. And you got to have it. In fact, we have AI in this show, just so you know, Sam. We're injecting it everywhere. You just can't tell.
That's right. And you might never know. It's stealth. We're just kidding. It's not true. unless you say AI is the intelligence to compress an audio file.
Yeah. Well, we've had AI Sam on here before. So that's
Yeah, we true. Have. That's true. But I look at this and I just go, it seems to me like, when it's built into everything, there's just going to be a kind of battle of the AI bot control. You know how there's an ecosystem with music or TV or video or you know, whatever system you're using for your office suite or whatever, and that kind of controls the game or puts you into another ecosystem or another.
Like VHS,
this is the next frontier
Betamax
of that. Because what if there's 25 chat bots in or digital assistants or whatever you want to call these things? They've kind of got to work that out a little bit too.
They're all different, and they all have different applications.
That's
I don't think there's just one
point,
category you can drop it all into.
No, but some of them fall through the cracks, though. And as you start to use it everywhere, certain ones are going to become more prominent, and certain ones are going to fall out of favor.
That's true.
And so, you know, I don't know. I mean, I know, for example, I use a social media distribution tool, which when I send something, it sends it to Facebook and Twitter and all over the place for me, right? And it's
What's
called
the name
Social
of that?
Pilot.
Oh, okay.
And Social Pilot has a chat bot in it that, you know, you can give it a quick summary of something and say, hey, can you write a good description of this for me? Or can you do this or that? And it helps you get your media posts together. And there's templates that you can start with, and then you can ask it, and it'll do some things and fill some things in and help you with things. It's very neat and very good. And so in an example like that, I can see using the chat bot in its own system. But at some point over time, people are going to start to get more comfortable and more familiar with certain assistants or bots or whatever else, and it's going to start to dictate which ecosystems they're in.
Right.
And I find that interesting. And that is based on, as you say, whatever your primary use case is, right?
Yeah, and I can see these, you know, one being more beneficial or effective for construction industry versus, you know, the copyright industry or things like that. I think they're just going to be nuanced to where if you're doing, you know, if you're more into video production and you're trying to manage a team, this, you know, this Slack bot is better or whatever. There's going to be
Right.
It's not just, you won't be able to compare apples to apples necessarily.
Yeah. Like Brave's Leo might end up over time being totally different than say Google's, what's that thing called? Gemini?
Yeah.
Or, you know, Microsoft's, what's that thing called?
Cortana Copilot.
Oh, yeah.
They've rebranded
too, okay.
So.
Right. And when they do that all the time, it's difficult for me.
Yeah.
Because I just struggle with, was Cortana yesterday or was that the competitor? I mean, I just have
Before
a hard
that,
time.
It was Clippy, the paperclip that would tap on your screen, you know.
That's right. Anyway, all I'm telling you is it's very interesting to see how this kind of will unfold. And I bring it all up and spend so much time on it because I want people to try to make decisions with their family. When you use these things, it's gathering more and more and more about you. It's developing a memory of your interactions with it. And you need to be very careful when you deal with this stuff that you keep that in mind when it comes to personal information. You know, and the question starts to become, can you trust some companies more than others? I'm sure so.
I feel like that stuff
should
be.
We've got to work through all that.
I feel like some of that stuff, when especially as we continue to develop with AI and these bots become more and more personal, have more of this memory like you're talking about, I feel like there almost needs to be sort of like a Bill of Rights of, and I don't mean a change to the Constitution. I just mean these companies.
You mean
should,
the equivalent, like they used to have the Flyers Bill of Rights or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
But there should be, companies should, and they have the technology to do this, to wrap up that information just like you would a secure chat. Like if you and I have a secure chat where they're just like, hey, we don't even have the keys to this. We don't have access to this. You can delete it if you want, but it's yours and only yours, just like the conversation of a secure chat would be. And this data, yes, it exists. Yes, it's accessible to this bot so that it can interact with you on a more personal level. But nobody can mine it, nobody can extract it, and nobody can use it somewhere else. It's kind of like the TPM module built into a phone where it's like, hey, it's there, but once we put it into there, you know, it needs to be able to allow people.
It'll always just go back to it. I mean, it can be dynamic in terms of ad information, but otherwise it's a snapshot.
Right.
And it's encrypted where it can't be accessed.
But you know there's going to be so many people, and they'll make law enforcement cases or whatever. Well, we got to have this information because we have to profile this person or we've got to do whatever. But it's getting so personal that it almost would be like having somebody's brain scan or memory print or something like that to where it's like, you know, you can store this if this is part of your product because you're doing whatever. But you cannot access this, and no one, this data that you're collecting, whether on purpose or by chance, really belongs to the individual. It's so individual that it would be unthinkable for other people to have access to it. Doesn't matter who it is.
One last story that relates to this very topic that I kind of want to bring up before the end of the hour on this. I mentioned that I think that things are going so fast we have a hard time keeping up with it. Headline says this: robocalls created by AI are now outlawed. Cecilia King with this piece. And basically, the move by the agency follows a robocall last month that was made all over the country to make, or it was made to sound exactly like Joe Biden, telling New Hampshire voters to stay home, but he had nothing to do with that. So I'm not interested in the political part of this about the voters. What I'm telling you is, hey, when they mock my voice on AI, I can't stop them. But when they do that to Joe Biden, now there's instantly a law that they brought forth that says, hey, can't do that.
Yeah, but is that...
So robocalls created by AI are stopped now, faking your somebody's voice.
Is that robocalls that involve AI, or is that robocalls that use AI to impersonate someone? Because there's a big difference, and I think it's the impersonation issue that people are having with this, that it wasn't Biden. But I don't think that AI, I could be wrong, but I don't think AI robocalls are going to go away anytime soon. I think everybody's going to be using that. I mean, right now you have...
No, no, and so the AI robocalls that you're talking about, it's not where they use a person or make it sound like a person. It's just a recording, or it's in someone's real voice that's really the person that did it.
Yeah, but I don't...
It's the fakery that is somebody else is the problem right now, and especially...
I gotcha.
That somebody
else. That's
the
impersonation, yeah.
Right.
And whether you use AI or whether you just, you know, hire somebody as an impersonator, either way, that should be illegal. You're really representing someone who had nothing to do with this. And that I think we probably already have laws that cover that anyway. But I think AI's, and I mean interactive. I don't just mean like this translate what you're saying and kind of interact, like you get these fundraiser calls and stuff like that, and you can tell that it's a pre-recorded script that they're playing. I mean, you're going to have two-way, real, interactive AI making calls, or whether it's for setting up a doctor's appointment, you're going to be like, and so that people can answer, oh, you know what, I really can't make that one. Can you guys cancel that, reschedule? And it will just be able to handle that on the fly. That's not going away, man. That's only going to continue to get more and more advanced every day.
Yeah, all I can tell you is we need that for sure. We need to keep up on this stuff, and we got to have conversations around it. And I know some are saying you guys are talking about it too much. I don't think so. I think we need to know how to interact with it, how to deal with it, how to preserve our own security relating to it, when it should be used and when it shouldn't. In other words, when is it valuable versus a detriment? How do you make sure it serves you, doesn't own you? How do you do all these things and navigate this? We need to decide this on an individual basis, on a family basis, on a societal basis, on a, you know, public and private basis, et cetera. You know, we need to go down the roads on this stuff as it gets built in every aspect of our life, because you don't want to wake up 5-10 years later going, this is way out of hand. Well, that's not the time to have the conversation, because I don't know how you dig out from that is the real point that we're making here with this.
Right.
And so even if you're not a technical person, you've got to kind of talk through this a little bit about what you're comfortable with. And you've also got to start to have a healthy dose of mistrust or distrust, whatever you want to call it, to say, you know what, when something comes out, is it really real or is it a bot? That's going to be more and more and more and more the difficult task, too. When do you know if something's really real, Jay?
I don't know. Maybe we need AI with Alzheimer's so that every day it kind of flushes its cache, and it's like you meet it again the next day, and it just learns about you that day. And
well, see, those, you know, on one hand, you can kind of laugh at that. On the other hand, it's serious, though.
It reminds me of VPNs with really short logging. You know, they're just like, hey, we only log for 24 hours, and that's it. After that, it's gone.
Yeah, they say they've outlawed unwanted calls generated by artificial intelligence. And so, you know, they're going to have to be forced to deal with the nuance that you brought up, Jay. The right now, the term that I'm seeing in the news is vague about that.
Yeah, that's part of the media just not even understanding. A lot of writers and reporters and media, they're not tech people necessarily, and they don't. AI is a buzzword to them, and they understand some of it, but certainly not to the proper depth that they might need to for an article like that.
Yeah, on a future episode, we're going to talk about this person that says, I stopped using passwords. It's great, and it's a total mess.
Yeah.
So that's a teaser about one of our up-and-coming episodes. There you have it. We're also going to talk to an insurance-licensed expert on cyber insurance. We'll count on that, too. So you got a lot of great up-and-coming additions. I'm also working with some people to talk about how is best to deal with your website and help web developers know exactly what you want. We'll do it all on future episodes. Thanks so much. Make it a great tech day, will you?